Welcome to the Freedom Through Acceptance meeting. My name is Becky and I'm an alcoholic. My home group is the Sunset Group in Tempe, Arizona, and my sobriety date is 7/25/02, and I'm delighted to be here. And I'm delighted to have my son in the front row. This is good family recovery. If we could first have a moment of silence in gratitude for the Alcoholics Anonymous recoveries of the past 75 years. So now, if you would please help me welcome Robert from Philadelphia.
Hi, everybody. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Robert. I'm glad to be here, glad to be sober, and I'm glad everyone else is here, too. And it's an honor, it's humbling to have the opportunity to share at this international convention. I attended my first international convention in Seattle, Washington, and had the pleasure of seeing a friend that I hadn't seen since the last day of that convention. It brought back a lot of memories. I remember I was sitting in the open-air hospitality area, and this little woman came up to me about 4 feet high, right? She was Asian in appearance, and she introduced herself. She told me her name was Mary. And she asked me, was I going to attend a block party that night on a waterfront? So I said, yeah, I was going to attend, right? So she said, will you dance with me? I said, sure, I'd be honored to dance with you. She said, can I introduce you to someone? I said, sure. And she waved a finger, and then a gentleman came up. She introduced me to her father. She introduced me to her three brothers, introduced me to her seven uncles. They was all recovering alcoholics from Tokyo, Japan, attended by, and I just was dissolved in tears just to see that collective sobriety right there all the way across the water, right? I was hooked on this thing. I was really hooked on this international convention thing ever since then. I have so many warm memories, but I never, beyond my wildest dreams, thought I would have the opportunity to speak at this event. Freedom through acceptance, right? Acceptance. I'm an alcoholic. I was an alcoholic, and for 21 years, I started drinking at 21. I mean, I started drinking at 17, and for 21 years, I was in bondage to alcohol. I became an alcoholic within weeks of picking up my first drink. I loved alcohol, so I thought, right? And I did so many things to control my behavior, my thinking, and I did whatever I could to protect my drinking, right? I came into AA. I was living in a homeless shelter in Center City, Philadelphia. That's where I attended my first meeting. I got into an argument with another resident on the first night in that homeless shelter. It was a huge facility, the house of over 300 men, and you had to strip down and take a public shower. You couldn't wear street clothes in that facility. If you didn't have your own pajamas, they issued what I call these institutional PJs. I tried to match up a set to match. I wound up with a striped top that was like three sizes too large, only had one button, so I had to curl it to keep it shut. Pajama pants was about four sizes too large. They were plaid. The elastic was worn away in the waist. So I had to ball them up in a knot to keep the pants from falling down, right? And if someone had stopped me, right, and really challenged me and said, Robert, would you take a look at yourself? Do you really take an honest look at what you've become? I would have argued with that person, right. Here I was with the striped pajama top, the plaid pants, how hair piled up on my head. I hadn't had a haircut. My money went to drinking. My jaws was all sunken, eyes bloodshot. I was 128 pounds. You could see my ribs. That's what alcohol had reduced me to. But I wasn't like the other residents. To me, they were bums and I was different. So I wanted to let them know that I was different. They showed me to the sleeping area and assigned me to bed number 91. They had three rows of cots. And I was two beds from the door. I looked around the room. There's a huge room, not this large, but it was a large room. And I saw a few people scattered around. Some was reading the newspaper. There was a card game going on in one corner and some small conversations. And all the way over in the distance, far corner of the room, was a black and white floor model TV. So I went over to the TV and started turning the channels. Across the room, I heard a voice. Get your hand off that TV. So I looked up and this guy's walking towards me. So I figured to myself, this would be an opportunity to let him know he was an intellectual in the house because I had some college in my background. And I want to differentiate myself from the rest of the residents. So I figured we could have a debate. And so I told him I was turning the TV on to public broadcasting. It was very intellectual. They had educational programming. It was very informative. We're having documentaries. But this guy had a different debating style. He came up to me, and he put his finger right in my face. And he said, if you don't get your hand off that TV, I'm going to close your eye for the weekend. Right? Right then, the car game stopped. People put down the newspapers. Everyone started gathering around for the confrontation. This guy was looking me up and down, making threatening gestures. I'm standing near my striped pajama top, my plaid pants. Right then, a member of the staff announced, AA, Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on the first floor. I became real interested in the AA meeting. Okay. I heard a lot of stories in AA where people share about they had a moment of clarity, they had a spiritual awakening. I can't claim that. I was afraid of that confrontation, right? And that's how I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. So I always felt that I thought fast on my feet. So I went downstairs to the meeting area, and it was some members of what we called, at that time we called an institutional commitment. Some members came from a home group to carry the AA message. And I figured that I could find out. I've never been to AA before. I had never talked to anyone about going to AA before. No one had ever admitted to me they had been to AA. But I figured I could find out who was in charge and buddy up to them. And what had happened was I had been fired from a good job I had with a government agency a few weeks before that. And I thought I could get a letter from the AA, whoever's in charge, as documentation to go back to my former employer to help get my job back. So that was my underlying motive of coming here, right? But the two people that came to speak, it was two women that came from a home group in the Germantown section of Philadelphia. They was obviously nervous. They didn't seem like they had any authority. So I was looking at them and trying to figure if I should approach them. Then there was another gentleman who came from outside the facility, and he was what we call a host. And his service was to be a backup in case the speakers were not able to come. He'll make sure the meeting went on. But he brought some literature, some pamphlets, and to spread them out. But he had a very low-key manner, and he didn't project any authority. So I couldn't figure out who was in charge. So I stayed for the meeting. I just wanted things to cool off up in the sleeping area for a while. So I sat down at the meeting to be entertained. And it was two women. They both were very attractive. And I sat right up front, started flirting with them, started winking. I thought I was a good catch.
Okay, right.
They didn't pay me mine. They each took turns sharing their story. They talked a little bit about their background and their drinking and their experiences as a result of drinking and how they came into AA. One woman became pretty emotional, and my denial was so strong, all of their experience went right over my head. I didn't identify with any of it, right? So I went back up to the sleeping area. I took two pamphlets, and I was kind of ashamed if anyone saw me with the pamphlets. I didn't want to be identified as an alcoholic. I stuck them down in the pajamas and put them underneath my mattress when I got back to the sleeping area. That was my entree into Alcoholics Anonymous. The next morning, a resident who wasn't even at that Friday night meeting asked me if I wanted to go with him to an outside meeting. So I thought for a second. I had some room in my schedule. Yeah, I said, yeah, I'll go. So we walked 10 blocks to a meeting that became my home group, the Saturday morning group. And it was early, about 9:30 on a Saturday morning. The meeting started at 10 o'clock. And there was a room full of people. And it was like maybe 50, 60 people, all animated, everybody happy, greeting each other, talking, right? It was a lot of energy in the room. I said, what is this? It wasn't like that institutional commitment that Friday night. It was different, right? So at the hour, at 10 o'clock, the chairperson just raised his hand, and instantly the room got quiet, and so the meeting took place. So, and it was a speaker discussion meeting, and after the speaker shared about 15 to 20 minutes, the chairperson asked, was there anyone there for the first time? So I put my hand up and said, would you care to introduce yourself? I said, my name is Robert. It seemed like the whole room said, welcome, just like that. I got goose pimples at the time, and I still get it. I could physically feel the voices of these people. And then after the meeting, members, mostly men, but it was men and women, they just rushed me and surrounded me after the meeting. They were talking to me, encouraging me, patting me on the back, writing down their phone numbers on pieces of paper. Some people even had their phone numbers taped, had a dime taped to their phone numbers. They said, just give them a call. They invited me to their home group. Some offered me rides to other meetings. And I said, whoa, what is this? I didn't know what it was. That's been my experience in AA from that point on. The strength and the support of this wonderful fellowship, right? It has never waned since that one day. And by God's grace, I've been sober since I attended that first meeting that Friday night. Now, after 21 years of progressive alcoholism, I had became a daily drinker the last 2 years of my drinking. And I didn't even recognize or appreciate the miracle. The craving to drink was removed after I attended that first meeting, right? I used to always say, yeah, I could stop any time I wanted to, but I was completely a prisoner in bondage to alcohol. So even after I started attending those meetings, I still had the mental obsession. My plan was to go back drinking. My sacred cow was to get my job back. With the help of a friend, I was able to get into an outpatient program. I was going to complete the outpatient program. And, of course, they included in the treatment plan to attend AA meetings. I was going to go to AA meetings and just be in full compliance. My plan was to go back drinking. I wanted to get reinstated at work, maybe rent a room. I wasn't going to put a lot of resources into housing, maybe rent a room. Then I was going to go back to drinking. That was what my plan. The higher power had a better plan for me than sober day at a time. Constant attendance of meetings, slowly, members by sharing their own individual experience, strength, and hope, spoon-fed me the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I got a sponsor in name only to keep other people at bay, right? I'm describing all of this so you can see how I was in bondage to alcohol, even after putting down the drink, because I still had that mental obsession, and I still had alcoholic thinking. I was in bondage to self. It took me 2 years. I'm not proud to say this. It took me 2 years to make a decision to make a serious attempt to learn and practice the steps of the program. I was in service. I got in service very early, right, and was in service continually. Matter of fact, I was invited to meetings to share on steps because I had over a year of continuous sobriety. But I didn't have any personal experience with the steps. So what I was doing was reading comprehension. I read the essay in the 12 and 12 on the steps, and then I'll elaborate a little bit on that, throw a little yeast on it. Right. I remember one time I was at a meeting. This was at the North Philadelphia group, and there was a member there who I really grew to love, Frank C. At that time he had over 36, 37 years of sobriety. I had just finished sharing my little piece on the seventh step, and he put his hand up and shared his experience, and he said he learned that humility and humiliation was opposites, right? So I spoke over him and corrected him, right? And I wonder why they didn't invite me back to that meeting for a long time, right? But I had a very patient sponsor who was always there for me. And when the time came, I went back to him. In my second year of sobriety, my two children, who was teenagers at the time, they were back in my life. And they started acting like teenagers and having problem behavior. And I was very stressed out about that. I didn't feel like drinking, but I just wanted, well, basically, I was sober for the first time and doing some positive things continuously back to back for the first time. So just like they say in the big book, I had a script for everybody else. And I had a script that my children were supposed to be following, and they weren't following the script. They was acting like children, right? And I was upset about that. And then shortly after that, my father, who had heart problems, he passed away. And I didn't think about taking a drink, but I was very, very upset emotionally, and I knew I was in a bad space. And I went back to my sponsor, and I told him I didn't want to just be superficial. I loved being sober by that point, and I became willing to do the work. Honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. It took me a while to acquire that, right? And my sponsor took me through the steps through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was still on the debating team with a lot of those issues. I remember when we was on the third step, and we was going over the three-step prayer, freedom from the bondage of self. I used to argue, shouldn't that really read freedom from the bondage of alcohol? Right? Shouldn't that be freedom from the bondage of that horrible substance and the effects of that? Right? He just sat in his quiet way. He said, no, freedom from the bondage of yourself. Right? Your issues, right? Your thinking and your behavior that you pray to be free of. Right? He took me through it. So it's been a slow process, but it's been a very productive experience for me. My sobriety date is September the 5th, 1986. And it's a one day at a time experience. And I have a friend, Sam, who always, when he gives his time, he always asks, and so far today. I would like to say that it's still a one day at a time experience. I love this fellowship. I don't have original thought, original idea that's of any value as far as Alcoholics Anonymous is concerned. I'm here on the shoulders of so many good people, right? Men and women who came before me and who carried me and supported me, gave me tough love at times, and gave me so much direction and guidance. Since I've been in this wonderful fellowship. Last night, yesterday afternoon, two members, we was talking and they told me, we was in a different part of the building in the hospitality room for the Pennsylvania delegation, right? And they told me that this ballroom was on the second floor, right? So I thanked them, right? And I made note of it. Then last night, the thought came to me, that maybe I should check to be sure because I don't want to be roaming around the hotel when it came time to speak. So I came over and there was a band playing here. And I looked in the door and I saw how large this room was. And it wasn't overwhelming, but it was filling, right? Right. And I thought that maybe word that got out that my ego was coming and they wanted a big enough room, right? But when I left the room, I was out in the lobby. Two members, they live here in San Antonio. They came up and introduced themselves to me. And they must have saw the look on my face. And one of them directed me to a reading that that served me well and really brought me down and made me right size so I could carry that AA message and to the best of my ability, right? Is Thurman here? Is Thurman from San Antonio is here, right? So I hope he's here in spirit because I want to thank him, right? So I'm just a sober alcoholic. I used to tell people, and I still tell my friends, I have a church basement story, and I don't know if it's large enough to fill a large venue like this, right? But I'm just a sober alcoholic, one day at a time, thanks to this wonderful fellowship and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not real proficient on the 12 steps. I try to practice them on a daily basis. I have a sponsor and sponsor people and taking them through the steps. And it's a learning process and it's ongoing. And we're learning partners. I learn, you know, it's no big I's and little U's. And I learn just as much I'm willing to share of my experience. I love service and I think that's a tool I recommend it highly. It'll serve you well. And what it did for me is it put me in contact with people on a continuous basis who were sincere and committed in the fellowship and on their program of recovery. And they shared a lot of things, a lot of personal things and a lot of practical things also for me. So I guess that's about all I have to share. I hope everyone have a great convention. And I want to thank my friends, Latif and the friends from Seattle, Washington, Pam and Roy from Las Vegas, and the people from Detroit, right? And is Philly in the house? So I'm going to keep coming back. Have a great convention, everybody. Thank you.
Wonderful. Our next speaker is from Manassas, Virginia. Please help me welcome Cindy.
Hi, everyone. My name's Cindy. I'm an alcoholic. Grateful to be sober and very grateful to be here today. Thank you for leading us through this meeting, and sorry, I can't top that, but I'll do the best I can. I used to chair the Virginia area. I rotated out a couple of years ago, and I always started with a joke. It's not for you. This is for me. So I'll give you my short version. It's a grapevine joke. Get a subscription to the grapevine. They're great. There's a half a glass of booze sitting on the counter, and a pessimist sees it and says, "Oh, it's half empty." The optimist sees it and says, "Wow, it's half full." The alcoholic sees it and says, "Are you going to finish that?" Alrighty then. I'm just shocked. I did the same thing Robert did. I went to a meeting this morning to kind of get a sense of the group and how people share at the mic and what's going on. And I was in a room that had about two sections, and I looked around and I thought, oh, that'll probably be about the same size. And I walked over here tonight or today to come in here, and oh my God, I buckled my knees at the door. And I'm pretty sure it was because I was going to fill the crowd, but I'm glad Robert's here to help. So I was really, when I submitted my form to my delegate to ask to, you know, participate if God was willing to have me do this. I first off never thought I'd get an answer back. I thought thousands and thousands of people must ask to do that. There's no way I'll get it, but I'm just putting myself out there, and that's what I do in Alcoholics Anonymous, is I continue to say yes and volunteer, and great things have come to pass. But I got that letter in the mail, and oh my God, that was the coolest thing in the world, you know. And of course, in my little pea brain, it says, God has asked you to speak. Well, it's about time he recognized my talents. So, I have to tell you, I told a few people, but for whatever reason, I didn't feel it necessary to shout from the rooftops. And I think that's probably a good thing. Keeps me in check. I didn't say this earlier, but my home group is Look at the Evidence Group in Greenwich, Virginia, which is outside the booming metropolis of Manassas, Virginia. we have a pretty good following there. It's a great home group. And my sobriety date is April 23rd, 1994. And thank you. Thank you. I was always taught when I'm speaking on a specific topic that I should go to the literature because, like Robert said, the valuable information is there and it's really not up here. So I was directed by my service sponsor to go to Language of the Heart, so I did. And I'm just going to show this one little snippet in one of Bill's writings. He said, "The immediate objective of our quest is sobriety, freedom from alcohol and all its baleful consequences. Without this freedom, we have nothing." And that kind of made it real clear to me about what this freedom is that we're talking about. When I was drinking, I certainly was not free. I didn't think that, though. I always thought I had the choice to do anything I wanted to do, as long as I had, you know, a drink. We can do that, sure. Is there going to be drinks there? Great, we can do that. Not knowing that that was my chain. I didn't understand that. I also thought that, you know, freedom meant to be able to be wild and crazy and free. Tequila did that a lot to me, but I again thought that was freedom. But in my being, I was so trapped. I was so trapped. I didn't know I was trapped. And I think that's one of the saddest things that we see in Alcoholics Anonymous is people coming in the room for the first time or people are struggling that don't know they're trapped, that there is a way out. And I know that was one of the options for the big book title. And, you know, it's true. There is a way out. And it's identified in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. So while I was drinking, I was kind of finding that first way of finding freedom, which is to stay drunk. And it doesn't work. It doesn't set me free. My alcoholism brought me to a place of desperation, despair, humiliation, absolutely. I was constantly looking outward for my well-being. I was looking outward for my self-worth. I was looking outward for everything. And I learned in here that that's not where we find it. But I didn't know that then. So I was tied to everybody around me because you had to prove who I was. And that was, again, another chain. So I remained drunk. And I although wasn't in a situation as Robert was to find these rooms, I came in through Al-Anon. I had been dating somebody in the fellowship, and it was suggested that if I go to Al-Anon, I can learn what that's all about. Okay. So off I went, because I'm a desperate alcoholic who needs to keep this person in my life, and if you tell me I got to do that, then by God, I'm going to do that. So I went to Al-Anon, and I love Al-Anon, and I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon, but they just weren't quite as fun. And I used to hear all the giggling down the hall, and I thought, you know, I really like what they're doing, and they told me to go to open meetings, and I've done that. I've done that. I don't remember, but I am sure I did that. And I heard what I needed to hear. So I got sober and started, you know, doing my best first step work I could do, which was to just not drink. And that at the time was all I could do. I didn't really want to participate in the rest of the deal because I didn't have all the problems you guys had, you know. I had not been to jail. I had not had a DUI. I had an old timer tell me that he had spilled more than I drank, and I was only 29. There was no way I was an alcoholic. And I don't know about any of you, but I get resentments kind of easy. And that guy really ticked me off. So I showed him. I stayed sober. But I... But I participated in what our book calls two-stepping, and I did that for years. And it was interesting when Robert was sharing, I was thinking I did a lot of that too. I was not an alcoholic who dove in here and said, oh, let's work the steps. I want to uncover all my defects, and I'm going to open up, and just everyone can come in and help me out. You know, that was not me. I was self-sufficient. I had a college degree, extended degrees, and, you know, I was smart enough to figure this out. Just give me that book. I'll, you know, get those done tonight, and we'll be good to go. But I got involved in service, and I have to tell you that that is probably the only reason that I'm sober today, is because I was involved in service and I didn't drink. That was it. I went through a really hard time. That relationship I was in to get here broke up. Imagine that. That's a real plug for 13th step. They don't work all the time. not a plug, just kidding. So I was not drinking, but I wasn't sober. I was coming to meetings and sharing at meetings, and I was sponsoring people. They had an interesting sponsor. And not really sharing myself. I was giving out of the literature what was there. I'm really good at saying, well, this is what it says. Go do it, you know. Not passing through me because it didn't apply. But I got to be about 8 years sober, and I was absolutely miserable. As you can imagine, I was a dry drunk in Alcoholics Anonymous and had spurts of real sobriety, but most of it was pretty nasty. And I wanted to die. I was 8 years sober and wanted to jump out my window in the condominium I was living in. And, you know, God has a sense of humor for me and quickly reminded me I'm only two stories up. not going to work. So... I'm also a scaredy cat and thought, I really don't want to be in the hospital. I hate needles. All right, I'm not going to do it. But I called for help, and, you know, and you guys came. You came and helped. And I got a new sponsor. I had a sponsor all this time, but, you know, she was into feeling good and not really doing the steps. We just talk about fellowship. It's okay. Didn't work for me. I stayed dry, but that was it. And, again, that's bondage of self. I mean, living in sobriety with alcoholics who are in recovery and not having it really stinks. You notice I didn't say a bad word. I really wanted to. So what I had to do was come to that place of acceptance. I had to admit to my innermost self that I truly was an alcoholic, and it wasn't about the physical craving any longer. It was about the mental obsession. It was about the craziness that goes on in my head. It was about my emotional instability and inability to deal with you. I could not form relationships with people. I could not do anything. But I'm a jokester, so I could tell enough jokes, and you keep inviting me back, and I just felt good, and that's good, you know, but I just wasn't getting it. So I had to fully dive in and truly accept all of that. And that first admission that we are alcoholic is so important, but it's not the whole deal. You know, it's just one part. It's just that first little entrance into the room. From there, we get to admit that, you know, maybe I don't have all the answers and I need someone else, you know, someone outside of me. And at first that was my sponsor, and eventually it became a higher power. I guess one would say that my higher power was my sponsor for a while, but at least it wasn't me, and that was okay too. And then eventually, as we're walking through the steps, we have to accept some things about ourselves that we don't particularly find very, you know, nice. I had to find that those characteristics that you guys are talking about in all the literature, I too possessed. And not only did I possess them, I reveled in them. And they were my coping mechanisms. You know, self-centered fear kept me running pretty much all of my life. So reviewing that history with someone else and asking God for some guidance was really tough. But I had to accept that, you know, this is my past. This is the history. I can't change it. I was constantly trying to change what my history said. I can't change me by changing the history. I have to change me. So that's where I got to coming to a place where asking God to help me remove those defects. Coming to God and saying, this is me. This is the great stuff. I got really good stuff, but I got all this baggage. And this has got to go away, and I need some help on all of it. So, God, you figure it out and tell me what I'm supposed to do. From there, I needed to accept again. I had to accept responsibility for my actions. I had to accept that I had screwed some people's lives up. I had to accept that, you know, everything I did in my life was not what I was taught to do when I was young. I got a lot of good directions. I just didn't listen really, really well. But I had to go back and mend those relationships. That was huge. Acceptance on what we've done to others is huge. And I had to make restitution for that. You know, I'm at a point now where accepting that this is an ongoing process, that we continue this. I want to do it once because I'm really not I'm not in for this work stuff. I don't like that at all. So I want to go through them once and then move on. Let's go have fun. Let's go to the convention. Let's have a party. But reality is the 10th step tells me I got to keep at this constantly. It's constant vigilance. And in order to do that, I got to get on my knees a lot. I got to get on my knees and ask for God's guidance every day. And I do that. And you know, when I do that, my life goes so much better. It really does. I used to say that it didn't, but it really does. And I have to admit that, you know, the man upstairs has something going on that I don't have. I get to share this with others. That's something else I had to accept. I had to accept responsibility that we don't just get this gift. We have to also give it away. That's part of the deal. That's my responsibility. I have to give it away to keep it. And if I don't, you know, I'm sunk. A friend of mine refers to it as the power bill. You got to pay the power bill. To get the power, you got to keep paying the piper. And that means giving away. I just wanted to share real quickly that in the reading in the language of the heart, you know, I opened it up. We talked about that last night. It's not freedom from acceptance. It's freedom through acceptance. Freedom from acceptance is what I did when I was drinking. But in the language of the heart, you know, that's a very spiritual idea, you know, freedom through acceptance. It's all very, you know, and in that book, it talked about this as it was all about the traditions. It was all about the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous and how we are safe to become our true selves in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. We are not holding to anyone for anything. We have our own way of doing things. We have our contributions tell us what we're going to do with our money. We tell our trustees what we want to do with our money. We come to Alcoholics Anonymous because we want to, not because someone sent us there. We're all here because we want to be here. Well, eventually. You know, but the traditions are what gives us the freedom to become who we need to be. That's what God's plan is for me, is to become the best me that I can be. And that means I've got some stuff that is baggage that comes up, and I've got really great stuff that comes out in other ways. But that was really an interesting point for me. I thought, wow, you know, I'm a traditions nut. And I thought, now that's what I wanted to see, was that the topic I was given was all about how we're protecting Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. And that to me is giving me the freedom to learn who I am. And you guys have taught me that as long as I'm willing and as long as I put everything I got into saying yes, that I get to be free. And freedom to me today is very different than it was. I'm not worried about what's happening out there. I'm not worried about what you think of me. I'm not worried about who's thinking what about what. I'm just free to be me. I'm the person today that I always wanted to be. And that's through these steps. Thank you.
Thank you, Cindy. And now it's my privilege to introduce Roy from Odessa, Texas.
Thank you, Becky. I'm Roy Bell. I'm an alcoholic. Through God's grace and the miracle of this program of recovery, I'm here and sober today, and my dry date's September 28th, 1967. And for that gift, I'm extremely grateful. And I'm grateful to be here today. I'm grateful all of you are here. Wouldn't be much need for us to have been here if you didn't show up. I assume all of you know something about acceptance or you wouldn't be in this audience. But that's kind of what we're supposed to talk about here today. I am glad you're here. But I am really grateful to many of those folks who are no longer here, that walked here before me. And I watched those people walk through times when were pretty tough for them, and they walked through it with grace and dignity and acceptance. And finally, I became, that was the kind of person I wanted to become to be. But I watch those people do that, and those are my heroes in this program, and they're still my heroes. Robert and Cindy, thank you. I'm delighted that neither one of you were a quick study in Alcoholics Anonymous, because you're sure not going to hear that from me. And I had somebody tell me right before this meeting started, and you might watch me closely. He said that the closer you get to the mic, the further you get from the truth. And you may want to watch me to see how close I get. I'm going to be compelled to tell part of the truth because a lot of people I know are here. And a lot of times I would like to embellish my story a little bit, and make it a little more interesting and exciting than it really was. But I think we did enough of that while we were out there. And you know, my problem is that I still remember enough about my story. I forgot a lot of it, but I still remember enough. And it makes me very grateful that I'm still here. You know, I had a hard time with this program. I wish I could tell you that I came here and I embraced Alcoholics Anonymous and I said, I'm home. You know, thank God I'm finally here to be with all you people. That just wasn't my way. Wasn't the way I got here. And I kind of cut it short. I came to AA once, and I lived next door to a man that I just absolutely hated. He was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'd go outside in the morning to pick up my paper and try to get my head clear, and I'd look across at his yard, and it's just absolutely manicured, beautiful. And you know what mine looked like. And I hated that man, and I learned to hate him even more because his wife would come over to my house and leave that subversive literature. You know how those Al-Anons are. And they'd leave that stuff all over my house, primarily left it in my reading room, and you know where that was, where I did my serious meditation. And I'd take that stuff and look at it and wonder, you know, why anybody would want to be a part of something that was so full of losers. I mean, you know, just absolute losers. And I couldn't imagine being a part of them. I had the privilege of having about 7 years of education, so you know how smart I was. And I could look through a lot of that stuff, correct it, make fun of it, throw it away, do whatever I wanted to do with it. But finally my life reached that point where there was a lot of heat on me, and some of y'all may have experienced that. You know, my banker, my wife, my clients, everybody I knew were kind of wondering what was wrong with me. And this guy next door he was persistent. And I finally told him, I'll go to one of those meetings with you if you'll just leave me alone. And I went to the Basin Group there in Odessa, which is still there. And I was more convinced after I got there that it was full of losers. And, you know, people that weren't nearly as smart as me. And I had a unique experience, first off in AA. I assume y'all have the same little tradition that we do. You get one of those little white chips when you get 30 days of consecutive sobriety. And, I'd stumble along, get a couple of weeks, maybe 3 weeks, but I never could get that month. And, so finally I told him, I said, you know, I think I can help you people with some of your program. There are a couple of things you ought to change. You know, one of them is that silly deal about having 30 days consecutive sobriety. And I believe if you change that to 30 days cumulative sobriety, that I could finally get one of those chips. Well, I hung around there for 9 months, and I never did manage to get one of those 30-day chips. And finally, an old gentleman who's no longer with us, and it's been a long time ago, said to me, Roy, you may not be quite old enough, you may not have drank enough, to be an alcoholic. It was the only thing I ever heard in all those Alcoholics Anonymous meetings I'd gone to. And I said, I think you're right. And I resigned from AA. I went home and told my wife that I'd been declared fit by the experts. And I no longer had to attend any of those goofy meetings. And I set out on the next 5 or 6 years of the most miserable time in my life. And, you know, this acceptance still was a bad deal to me. And it looked like to me it was kind of a two-pronged deal. You know, I was going to have to accept the fact that I was an alcoholic. And then I was going to have to try to accept the fact that you really cared about me one way or another. And I juggled both of them, and I didn't have much success with either of them. But finally, I reached that point where I had a guy that I drank with that I loved because he was the worst drunk I'd ever known. And, you know, we all look for lower companions, right? I don't know about you, but the longer I drank, the harder it became for me to find a lower companion. And I hung on to Old Hoss pretty carefully because he was a guy I'd go pick him up about 10. About 12, he'd pass out. I'd take him home. I'd go get him about 3. About 5 or 6, he'd pass out. I'd take him home. And I'd go get him about 10 and take him back, and we'd be there till the bars closed, and he'd pass out, and I'd take him home. And I thought he was the worst drunk that I'd ever met in my life. And I went off on a little trip to California, came back and, looked up Hoss, and, we went out to one of those nice places. A lot of y'all are from Texas and you understand, you know, what a beer joint is. A lot of you folks, call them nightclubs, saloons, whatever. But in Odessa, Texas, we had beer joints, and full of rough and rowdy people, and it was where I loved to be. And I was with Old Hoss this night, and he came over after about 2 hours, and he said, Roy, I wish you'd move over to that other table. You're crazy, and you're going to get us both killed. I don't want to sit with you anymore. Now, this is my lower companion, and... You know, I had a couple of thoughts go through my mind that night, one of which I hope never returns, and one which I hope I can always remember. The one I hope never returns was that I had absolutely no hope. You know, I was appealed, zero, or nothing, and I don't ever want to feel that way again. The other one was the one I hope I can remember, And it probably was the first time I got anywhere close to acceptance. Because I knew I had a drinking problem, but more than that, I knew I was going to have somebody help me to get over it. And, you know, asking anybody for help had never been a big priority in my life. And, but I knew that night that that's what was going to have to happen to me to get sober. And I went off to a place I hated. You know, I've used that word a lot, but that's kind of where I was at that period of my life. You know, with you people, when I came back, I didn't love you. I didn't hate you. I just didn't care about you one way or the other. And that was my attitude. And anyway, I stayed in that place 21 days, and they sent me home and said, if you don't straighten up, you'll be back here again. And I said, you won't ever see me up here again. I've had all your hospitality. I won't. Thank you. And I went back to the suburban group of Alcoholics Anonymous in Odessa, Texas, which is still my home group. And I think it's the best group in the entire world. And if you don't feel that way about yours, you need to work at it and make it the best one, you know. You know, don't leave and come screw mine up. But those people, you talk about some people who were tolerant and accepted me. I spent a year, and our meetings then started at 8:30. I got there at 8:30. They said the Lord's Prayer at 9:30. I never said the Lord's Prayer. I didn't hold anybody's hand. I wasn't interested in getting to know you or you to know me. And I spent a year that way. And I always tell this story about one guy that was there because he's one of my heroes that I talked about earlier. This guy's name was Big John. And John stood at the door of our group. And every group needs a man like that. And everyone that came in, he shook every man's hand. And he hugged every woman. And I didn't speak to anybody else except John. And I spoke to John because I was afraid not to. And John was a roustabout, and he was a man's man. He was all sinew, muscle, and bone. And I can still hear him coming up to this podium, and he'd say, John's the name. I fought that alcohol fair and square, and it whopped me. And I want to tell you what kind of man John was. When they put him in jail with 20 or other people in the cell with him, John took up all the matches, and nobody smoked unless John told them they could. That's the kind of guy he was. So I figured if that booze could whip John, it could whip me, and that may have been my first taste of some real acceptance. And then I went off to a little conference down in Brownwood. And, you know, amazing thing, and y'all were talking about this, what kind of getting outside of yourself. They gave me a broom and a mop, and I emptied ashtrays, and I picked up cups, and I set up chairs and tables and looked after all those sloppy drunks. And it was a place I didn't want to go and said I wasn't going to. But when I left there, something strange had happened to me. I'd gotten outside of myself for the first time in my life. And I came home and joined Alcoholics Anonymous. And got me a sponsor. And this little guy had a spring in his step and a glimmer in his eye and a smile on his face. And he knew more about alcoholics than any man I've ever known in my life. And he spent a lot of time with me. He was very helpful to me. And he looked me in the eye, and he said, you'll go work with some other drunks. And when you talk to them, you won't ever look down on them. You never look down on another drunk. You'll accept them right where they are at eye level with you. And I hope that's what I've been able to do since then. And I think it's a great part of acceptance. Because that's what happened to me. I mean, people put up with me for a year when I was absolutely intolerable, and I wouldn't have put up with me. But that's what this program does. I wanted to do something, and I normally don't read, but I was told by the sponsor of mine, I was having a little trouble with relationships and accepting authority and a few minor things like that, and he talked to me some about acceptance, and in our area, and I don't know about yours, but if you start whining very much around our group, somebody will invite you to page 449 in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm going to read this because I think it says everything that needs to be said about acceptance. And acceptance is the answer to all my problems today. When I am disturbed, it is because I find some person, place, thing or situation, some fact of my life unacceptable to me, and I can find no serenity until I accept that person, place, thing or situation as being exactly the way it is supposed to be at this moment. Nothing, absolutely nothing, happens in God's world by mistake. Until I could accept my alcoholism, I could not stay sober. Unless I accept life completely on life's terms, I cannot be happy. I need to concentrate not so much on what needs to be changed in the world as on what needs to be changed in me and my attitudes. And then the other part says, and acceptance has taught me that there is a bit of good in the worst of us and a bit of bad in the best of us, that we are all children of God and we each have a right to be here. And, I think that's some of the strongest words I've ever seen in it. It makes me think about the seventh step prayer where, we really talk, accept me as I am, the good and the bad. And if any of us had to be perfect to be here, I don't think this room would be nearly that full today. Probably be empty. And, I'm delighted that Alcoholics Anonymous is that way, that we accept us right where we are. Nobody asked me anything about my financial standing, my social standing. Nobody cared where I'd been. All they cared about was where I was going. And, thank God for this program and that type of attitude. And, one of the things that I still find kind of amusing, except it's sad, when I read in the book that, we reached that place where we either had to go to the bitter end or accept spiritual help. And I think that's where acceptance really finally happens. And, for most people, that wouldn't be a problem. I mean, they'd look at that and say, yeah, I'm going to accept spiritual help. I'm not going to the bitter end. But, a drunk would probably tell you, well, let's wait till tomorrow and we'll talk about it, And that was kind of my attitude. And also, when I read in my book and I look at those promises, it says we're going to know a new happiness and a new forgiveness. And what a great promise that is. And for me, when I look at those promises and those are coming true in my life, then my level of acceptance is pretty good. When they're not coming true in my life, I'm not accepting things as they are. I'm trying to make them what I want them to be. And today, and I never thought I'd be able to say this, but today I'm exactly who I want to be. I'm where I want to be. And I don't want to change places with anybody else in this world. This program has given me more than I could ever hope to return. And if you're having trouble with that acceptance, open that book and check that 449 and read it and accept it. It's been a privilege to be here. Thank you.